This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 3 months after the events in Charlottesville, Virginia, followed by the toppling of a Confederate statue in Durham, the debate over monuments and memorials to the Confederacy is surfacing again in North Carolina. UNC Chapel Hill leaders are weighing the removal of the Silent Sam statue, which has been a lightning rod for years and was the focus of protests following Charlottesville. That statue is just one of more than 200 Civil War statues, memorials, and markers in North Carolina. Most pay tribute to the Confederate side. A plurality of Southerners, 43%, told a newly released Winthrop University poll that Confederate monuments and memorials should be left as is. Only 5% supported their removal. Today, in collaboration with UNC-TV, we look at these monuments, their history, and their relevance in today's society. My co-host for the conversation is UNC-TV's Deborah Holt-Noel.
What we'd like to do is get started with a question about these monuments, and I'd like to direct this to Dr. William Sturkey. And Dr. Sturkey is an assistant professor of history at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We appreciate you being here today. Can you share with us a little bit about some of the misconceptions about these monuments?
Sure, yeah. I think the single biggest misconception is that they are strictly placed to remember Confederate soldiers. We know a lot more about the organizations that placed the monuments when they did, many of which were placed 30, 40, 50 years after the end of the war. And what they were was just one part of a project to promote white supremacy across North Carolina and across the former Confederacy throughout the South. And so we see the monuments that are still around today. That's just one part. Other things that organizations that promoted Confederate monuments did was to go into schools to offer new interpretations of the Civil War, promoting the morality of slavery, suggesting that African Americans should not be able to vote, suggesting that the 15th Amendment should not apply to African Americans living in the South, promoting the Ku Klux Klan in certain cases. For example, the Confederate monument that exists on my campus. The very next year, the United Daughters of the Confederacy published a book promoting the Ku Klux Klan for protecting white women by lynching black men. And so one of the biggest myths is that it's just about the soldiers, and that's simply not true at all.
So many of these monuments have been up over 100 years, and we're just now beginning to have an extended conversation about what should happen to them. A lot of people want them to stay where they are. Other people want them to go into museums, and we have Brenda Tindall with us, who is from the Levine Museum of the New South in Charlotte. And I'm just curious about what kinds of conversations museums are having about where these artifacts should go.
Well, museums are an extension of the historical enterprise, and ultimately what we're interested in and the kinds of conversations taking place in museums is that there needs to be more context around not simply the Confederacy and the symbolic gravitas of these monuments, but also the intentions behind why these monuments were actually constructed, in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, which also happened to coincide with the deepening racial segregation and the deepening of Jim Crow in the American South. And so it's really important to draw those important connections, but more than anything, providing more context to understand why so many people, not just in the South, but throughout the United States, respond in a variety of ways and draw different meanings from these monuments.
But do they have to be in museums to do that? Can you put a plaque up where they are right now with the context?
I think the assumption is that museums are these cabinets of curiosity. What museums are really interested in is providing the kinds of context that not just create these static relationships between visitors and artifacts, but also providing opportunities for deeper and more thoughtful dialogue around the meaning and the repercussions of these kinds of monuments.
Thank you, Brenda. And, you mentioned intention and context, and I'd like you to pass the mic backward a little bit to another member of our audience. Frank Powell is a member of the North Carolina Sons of Confederate Veterans. Appreciate you being here as well. What can you share about context and intention as it regards these monuments?
I think Dr. Sturkey, couldn't be more wrong. These narrative going around today is just a revisionist history. These monuments and statues were placed up mainly by ladies. Some of them took 10, 15, 20 years to gather the money together to place them. And almost all of them say, to our Confederate dead. Just about all of them say that, which in fact makes them memorials and not monuments. They were memorials to men who answered the call of their state and marched off to war, many of them who did not come back. So that, in essence, also makes them grave markers for these men that are laying in far-off fields where nobody knows. So our position is, no, they should be left as they are and where they are, because history is history, like it or not, good or bad, history is history.
We'd like to get some reflections, some more historical reflections, I think.
And Dr. Timothy Tyson's with us. He's a best-selling author and historian, and he has roots here in North Carolina and a personal legacy of social justice and activism. And this is the argument right here. History, heritage, purpose. Why were they up? What do they stand for? How can we better understand the history and the heritage that people attach to these monuments?
I would say ask yourself, when do we put up monuments to things we just put in the public square, to things we just want to remember but that we no longer believe in or honor, to mistakes we have made? We don't put up monuments to that in the public square. We write books about that. We do museum exhibits about that. But you won't see that happen very often. What we put in the public square is what we hold high and what we value and what reflects our common values.
I'd like to share a comment that we gathered from our Facebook page that kind of speaks to that. There's a woman from Wilmington who asks the question, what do different people see when they look at the monuments? Just because the major premise behind the war was wrong, does that lessen those who fought for what they believed at the time was a good cause? And I'd like to go back to you, Dr. Tyson. Help us address that woman's statement, because a lot of people have said, you know, my ancestors fought for what they believed in, and should we not honor them?
I don't think we should honor everyone who fought for everything. I don't think that we should honor white supremacy, even though that was one of our deep values for centuries. You know, we should never forget the past, but it's a different thing about, you know, when we place something as an emblem of honor, when we put it, you know, in a center of town coming down Main Street. That's a little bit different than a thoughtful approach to looking at the history, the way it happened, which I couldn't be more in favor of. I think that's so important that we have a real sense of history and not just a bumper sticker sense of history.
I'd like to get a reflection from Mr. Powell on what's been shared so far. Have you heard any of these sentiments before, and what would your reflections be?
Yes, I have heard these sentiments before. It's a very complicated issue, I think, on both sides, because there are strong feelings on both sides, and I don't believe the sides have spoken to each other. And it probably would be good for the sides to speak to each other, but that doesn't change my position about the monument should stay as they are.
Well, we have both sides here, and we're kind of speaking to each other today. Yes. on this very topic. I think, Doctor, you wanted to chime in here. I could tell by your body language there.
I think one of the key issues to recognize here is that new knowledge has been created basically since we've ended Jim Crow, right? People like me are allowed to work at universities, conduct research, enter archives, teach classes, whereas before 1964, my perspective would never be allowed. So what we had was generations of people, right, led by groups like the United Daughters of the Confederacy, who a racially segregated body, let's make sure that we include that, who sort of created this false narrative, right, in order to instruct an entire generation or two about a certain purpose behind the war. Now, what we have in the publishing world and the peer review world is not highly contested by academics at all, right? It's only contested by individuals with a certain viewpoint that was developed for a certain set of purposes at the beginning of the 20th century, right? And then we have peer-reviewed academic research taught at universities.
Like to shift just a little bit now, because There are laws in place now that help to protect some of these monuments. There's actually policy support that protects monuments and others from being moved. In July of 2015, following the mass shooting at a black church in Charleston, South Carolina, and the removal of the flag from the South Carolina State House, North Carolina lawmakers successfully enacted a measure called the North Carolina Heritage Protection Act. And for this, I'd like to go over to Adam Lovelady. He's an urban planning and legal scholar with the UNC School of Government. Adam, can you share with us what is clear in this law and where is there room for interpretation?
Sure. So it's a combination of laws. There was already on the books a requirement that for state-owned statues, moving or altering those would have to be approved by the State Historical Commission, and that was long on the books. This new legislation passed in 2015. It's worth noting that it was introduced before the shooting in Charleston, but then ultimately approved by the General Assembly after the shooting in Charleston. And it added this language, which continues on to set up the times when objects of remembrance, as that's defined, when they can be moved or relocated, and when they can't. There's a general prohibition on completely removing statue or objects of remembrance, but there is allowance for temporary and permanent relocation if there's a construction project that's going to impact it, or if the state or local government believes that they need to protect the statue by moving it. If it's a temporary relocation, it's for only 90 days after that project. But if it's a permanent relocation, then it has to go to a place of similar prominence and access. And so one of the questions around the law is, well, what would be a place of similar prominence and access as compared to the Capitol grounds or the courthouse square?
Gary Pendleton was in the legislature when this law was passed between 2014 and 2016. And I'm just curious, as from your point of view as somebody who was there, what's the intent of the law? What was the real intent, the heart of the matter?
To preserve these monuments that mainly recognize the veterans. One thing I do want to point out that most people don't know, in 1959, Congress passed a law that veterans of the Confederate States are deemed to be veterans of the United States and entitled to grave markers and that sort of thing. So they recognize it. So to me, to go deface something that honors a veteran, because they are U.S. veterans per U.S. law, is why don't they just go up to Arlington and spray paint the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier? Same thing to me. And by the way, I'm a retired brigadier general and served in the Army 26 years. So, you know, this is what we're looking at. I'd like to also, can I say anything else?
Please.
I'd like to go to this gentleman over here from UNC. Rob Christensen, who's been with the News Observer 36 years, wrote a front page story about, what, a month ago? And he said that he's been all over the North. And he's gone to all these different statues they have honoring their generals up north. And they were put up in the same two time frames as the ones in the South. And they commemorate either the anniversary of Gettysburg, 1863, or 1865. Same time frame, except the South had no money. So they had to save money because the South was completely bankrupt. So I feel very strong that our veterans ought to be honored, and I think anybody that defaces one of these monuments, again, just go to Arlington with a can of spray paint.
We'll get back to our look at Confederate monuments in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
More Charlotte Talks in just a moment on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Our support comes from WFAE members and Duke Energy, investing in technology designed to modernize the Carolinas energy grid over the next 10 years. More at duke-energy.com/future. And Hendrick Volkswagen of Concord, offering over 250 new and certified used Volkswagens. Details at Hendrick Volkswagen of Concord at the Concord Mills exit or hendrickvwofconcord.com. On the next Charlotte Talks, Willie Grimes was sentenced to life in prison for a Catawba County rape that he didn't commit. All along, he maintained his innocence, and eventually, after 24 years in prison, he was exonerated. Guest host Sarah D'Elia talks with Willie Grimes about his experience and why he doesn't hold a grudge. That's coming up on Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, digital pills that report from inside your body on what you've taken and when they're approved. Where does this go? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point, coming up right after Charlotte Talks at 10, here on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Let's get back to our conversation on Confederate monuments at the studios of UNC-TV in Durham.
We have Bree Newsom in our audience, and you gained fame by scaling that Capitol in South Carolina and removing that flag. What are your thoughts about the presence of Confederate monuments today? I know that how you feel about the flag, but some people would distinguish between the flag and these monuments.
Yes, well, I actually wouldn't distinguish between the two. I think the fundamental issue is really the ideology of white supremacy, how that is present in our culture, how that manifests as systemic racism, first beginning with the formation of the Confederacy and systemic racism as it existed in the form of chattel slavery, right? The Confederacy was formed for the express purpose of maintaining that system, for keeping the majority of Southerners who were actually enslaved African Americans at that time in a state of perpetual bondage. That's why the Confederacy was formed, and that's why the war was fought. So on one hand, we have to ask the question of why are we building monuments to that cause? We don't, for instance, erect monuments to Americans who decided to side with the British during the American Revolution. We don't have monuments to the Loyalists. We don't have monuments to Americans who sided with the Nazis during Germany, because we would immediately view such monuments as morally abhorrent because of what they represent. But the issue of Confederate flags and monuments is an ongoing one, because we have not resolved that issue of racism and systemic racism. The flag that I removed in South Carolina, for instance, was raised in 1961 during the height of sit-in protests, really as a statement of opposition to the civil rights movement. So it's important to understand this whole period of time, from the construction of the first monuments to it, the flag being lowered in 2015. You're talking about a period of time where we have racism encoded in the law and then held in place in many ways by terroristic violence by groups such as the Ku Klux Klan, which the Daughters of the Confederacy is honoring, by acts such as Dylann Roof going into a church and massacring nine black parishioners while they were praying. It has to be understood that that's coming out of a long history of violent racial oppression. And if we're not discussing the issue of monuments and flags within that context, then we're doing ourselves a great intellectual disservice.
Well, let's talk about history for a second, because we had a comment from Facebook while we're going on here. And the comment reads, "Until all the latest commotion began, no one ever thought of these military tributes as racist. History is history. Removing statues won't change that."
Well, that's completely false. I mean, again, part of this conversation is about completely discounting the lives and experience and opinions of black Americans, not just during slavery, not just during the Reconstruction period, but even today. So the idea that this is something new, I mean, this did not just suddenly become an issue. It's just that the tide of public opinion has finally reached a point. As Dr. Sturkey was mentioning, you finally have people of color in institutions and in places of power where until like the past 50 years, we were not allowed entry, and our opinions and our voices were not given any kind of space.
You took it upon yourself several years ago to climb that flagpole at Columbia at the State House grounds and take the Confederate flag down. And recently here in this area, we've had an instance in Durham where somebody toppled a Confederate monument. Maya Little is a history student at UNC Chapel Hill. She's been engaged with the protests at the Silent Sam Memorial on that campus. What differences, Maya, have you observed, if any, between the kind of protests you are involved in and what happened here in Durham?
I would say that our protest has been peaceful and legal since the beginning. We want to take this monument down peacefully, legally, and we want to also win hearts and minds. And we are in a unique position to do that as a university. For one, as Dr. Sturkey already talked about, this monument doesn't stand to tell us anything about history. It stands to erase history. And as students of history and as teachers of history, it is important that we counter this Confederate history, which, again, rose out of Jim Crow, affirmed Jim Crow, and states things such as that black people enjoyed slavery and that they were educated by their slave owners, which is completely false based on the risk of death black people took to escape slavery before the Civil War. So as a university, on one stand, we serve to actually talk about history and tell a complex and comprehensive history, which the statue has never served to tell in its history at our university.
I would like to direct this next question to Melinda Lowry. She is an associate professor at UNC, and she's director of the Center for the Study of the American South. Melinda, if we take down these emblems, what does that do to our remembrance and our holding on to certain history?
Well, as others have said, history does not change. Our interpretation of it changes. And the question that we have to ask ourselves as local communities is, which kinds of history do we choose to remember? For me, as an educator, as someone who teaches American Indian history in North Carolina, I wonder why our heroes of American Indian communities are not honored in this state, why we don't have monuments to their achievements, why we don't have monuments to more achievements of the civil rights movement, why our sit-in markers, for example, around the state are so small in comparison to Silent Sam or the other Confederate monuments to Confederate soldiers that dot the state's landscape. Those are very hard questions to answer. I think the insights that have been provided today about when Confederate monuments were put up, why they were put up, and who put them up for what reason, begin to address these really important questions about what we value. What we now have to do is recognize that while white supremacy has always infected North America since the arrival of Europeans in 1492, we can make a different decision as a society to honor all of us as equals and truly fulfill the promise that this country holds through its Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which doesn't just protect the existence of the monuments, it protects the speech and the opinions of all of us.
You know, you talk about how there's actually an absence of monuments to other references of history, the Native American, civil rights, et cetera. And one could say, well, groups are free and at liberty to raise the funds, and rather than putting forth energy to protest the existence of one monument, raise another.
I wish that were the case. That would be fantastic.
Why can't they?
Having been part of several efforts to raise monuments in Robeson County, North Carolina, to honor American Indian heroes and the Lumbee community, I can tell you it's not that easy. You have to go through the State Historical Commission, for example. There are lots and lots of rules and regulations that prevent people from simply telling their own story. Dr. Sturkey and Ms. Newsom's point, though, about the presence of people like us in these public conversations is truly important. You know, it's only been in the last 30 or 40 years that people with a viewpoint that opposed white supremacy have really been allowed to speak in these kinds of forums. And if it took European Americans several hundred years to mount the effort and raise the funds and secure the laws to promote a vision of white supremacy, then I believe that other people ought to be given at least the same amount of time.
We have three historians sitting right here, and I'm just, social mores change over time. 100 years from now, if they play this show back, this is going to look like an antique. How should we handle changing social mores and changing ideology when something was history? It's history. There it is. Should we just wipe it off the face of the earth? What do we do about it, Dr. Tyson?
I think it's really important that things be understood in their historical context and that we not impose our views of things on the past. We have to understand the past as it happened, as it was. What does it mean to us? And but what happens is this commemoration process is fraught politically. For example, in North Carolina in 1894 and 1896, we elected an interracial government, the Fusion Movement, as it was called. They opposed the white supremacy campaigns. They opposed disfranchisement. It was very difficult in the 1890s to reach across color lines and talk about, and in the very shadow of slavery and the crushing of Reconstruction, to reach across those lines and build a coalition. And it was far from perfect. But look at what our children and what our grandchildren are going to be facing as citizens and the kind of social order that they will be trying to construct. What lesson does the Confederacy have for them? What lesson does the Fusion Movement have for them? I think it's very plain that the Fusion Movement is a more compelling and important thing to teach our children about, and yet it doesn't show up in the textbooks, and there's no monument to them anywhere in North Carolina. There are 5 Confederate monuments on the State House grounds.
There's so much history to be shared, and there's a certain history that's been taught so far, and then there needs to be a move for rewriting how that history is shared and also who's narrating it and the power of that voice behind the story. We actually have another question I want to take from our audience, and this is a journalist, Sierra Hinton. Sierra, do you have a question?
My question, some of you have already touched on this a little bit, but many of the Confederate monuments that exist in public spaces and on public land. What duty does this state have to all citizens to ensure a fair and equitable existence? When do we put that existence before heritage and history?
This gets back to something I think Frank Powell said earlier in this conversation with the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And I've talked to a lot of members of the Sons of the Confederate Veterans over the years, and they are absolutely sincere in their beliefs that these monuments are all about history and heritage and the honoring of ancestors. They're absolutely, to the bottom of their souls, they believe that. Yes. But what do you say to people who are really viscerally offended by what these stand for and the time in our history when black people were nothing more than chattel?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say a point I wanted to make earlier in the conversation was on the other side of the room, that it's a real danger, and you touched on it too, it's a real danger to judge people that lived 100 or 150 years ago by today's standards. In 1860, every white person, north and south, was a white supremacist by today's standards. So I don't think you can really use that as a judge.
But if you have these statues standing in 2017 on public grounds, and I'm a black person, and I have to walk past this statue every single day to get to work or to whatever I have to go, to class, whatever, and I'm offended by that, why should they be allowed to stay? Why should my tax dollars fund that?
And I'll interject, it's not just black people who are offended.
Well,
That's true.
To start with, the Sons of Confederate Veterans paid the money to have the statues cleaned the last time they were cleaned, so no tax money is going to those statues. But somebody who is offended, I'd just like to have a serious conversation with them and explain our viewpoint.
Do you feel like you haven't been heard in
conversations? Definitely, yes, definitely. We have not been heard, and there's so much false narrative out there. A lot of people are told something, and they take it as gospel. They never research, and they never check any further, and they keep telling it over and over again until it becomes true, when it really isn't.
Can you give an example of that?
This white supremacy nonsense. Statues and monuments and memorials do not represent white supremacy at all.
Dr. Sturkey, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, so just a couple of things. So one of the things that we see often during the dedication speeches to the monuments is the emphasis that the monuments represent white supremacy. So we have all sorts of documents, speeches, transcripts. I'm happy to share any of those. Many of those are available online through the Wilson Library, where the dedicators quite specifically said this is in defense of white supremacy and the Anglo-Saxon race. We can prove that up and down all day, every day. The other thing, too, is that it's not quite true that the Sons of Confederate Veterans help pay to maintain the monuments. The University of North Carolina has spent over $40,000 in the last 3 years in order to help do so. I'm sure that the town of Chapel Hill would love to send a bill to the Sons of Confederate Veterans for the police presence required in August to help protect the monument at that point in time, in which there was also a helicopter involved during that point in time. There are police probably stationed there right now. So it is absolutely taxpayer dollars going to protect these monuments, and I would welcome any group who wants them to come to Chapel Hill, take Silent Sam, put it on your front yard, celebrate it every day. I don't care. Protect it yourself. Pay for it yourself. I would welcome that intervention. Anytime they want it, they can come have it.
Thank you, Dr. Sturkey. We have a question. All right. Well, let's go ahead and clarify it now.
Okay. One of them talked about the basically insinuated the United Daughters of the Confederacy and Sons of Confederate Veterans were racist. There are black women in the United Daughters of the Confederacy. Yes, there are. There are black men and sons of the Confederate veterans. If you go to Monroe, North Carolina, there's a big monument in front of the courthouse to 10 black Confederate soldiers that fought for the Confederate states. Yes, blacks fought for the Confederacy. To say that the war was fought for slavery, only 6% of Confederate military owned slaves.
But the first paragraph of every single article of Confederation in every state that seceded from the Union specifically says that the reason for the secession is slavery.
That's so. But
so it was
look
a,
at the,
so
look
was
at the individual soldiers that we're honoring. 6% of them own slaves.
But it's not really a conversation about the soldiers and whether or not they owned slaves. It's about the war and the purpose of the war,
slavery. No, we're honoring these soldiers. We're not honoring the Confederate states.
Let me get a comment now in from Bree Newsom. Thank you.
Yes. So, first of all, the war absolutely was fought over slavery. That was the issue. Simply because you have a black person who was in a Confederate uniform doesn't change the meaning of the war. And yes, the majority of people in the South were not slave owners. That's not that doesn't discount the reality of white supremacy as an ideology. The reason why the white people who were in the South were not enslaved and the black people were was it was built on a racist belief that African Americans should stay in a state of bondage. That was made very clear by quotes from the president of the Confederacy, by the vice president of the Confederacy, who said that the cornerstone of the Confederacy rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man and that slavery is his natural place in the world. That's essentially what he said. So this, again, the debate over monuments is really a deeper debate over ideology. It's a debate over slavery, over whether or not we feel that slavery was truly wrong. And it's a debate over modern racism as it exists today. The fact that many of these monuments were placed on courthouses and on public property was a statement about the order of power in the South at that time. And continuing today, that's why we have this ongoing debate. Yes, the letter of the law says that we have equal protection under the law, but the reason that we had a civil war, the reason that we had a civil rights movement, the reason that we're continuing to debate this is because that's not true in practice. And until we truly believe that everyone in this country should have equal rights and should have equal say, then we are still living out the legacy of white supremacy. The debate over monuments is just one part of that. But we can't continue to talk about monuments and flags as though they exist separate from this ongoing legacy of racism and racial terror in this country.
Our conversation on Confederate monuments continues from the studios of UNC-TV in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Our special edition of Charlotte Talks continues in just a moment on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Our support comes from WFAE members and N.C. Warren presenting Clean Path 2025, a strategy to slow climate change, save money, and create jobs with local solar power and battery storage. ncwarren.org. And Tyndall Subaru Gastonia, featuring the new Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com and on Facebook at Tyndall Subaru. Coming up at 10 o'clock on Point, the FDA has approved the first digital pill. It has an embedded sensor to help keep track of whether users are adhering to their prescriptions, in particular users with mental illness. Its use is voluntary, but it's still likely to raise questions about privacy. A closer look coming up in 20 minutes with Tom Ashbrook and On Point here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Let's hear a comparison between the United States and China from a person who knows both.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
Cabarrus Froand Community Health Centers serve 7,400 patients, about half of which are uninsured. CEO Kim Wagoner says if lawmakers don't renew federal funding...
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We head back to UNC-TV in Durham for our conversation on Confederate monuments.
Can I bring Brenda Tindall back into this conversation? Brenda's with the Levine Museum of the New South. In Charlotte, we really haven't had a lot of discussion about this. We've had our eyes focused on other issues that maybe could stem from the Civil War, because we're talking about economic inequity, etc. A lot of people would say that these statues are reminders of our history. What if they stayed up? Why couldn't we use them as a jumping-off point to talk about what those statues mean, what that time in our history meant, and how it relates to today and where we are today in race relations?
I think that they are jumping off points. I mean, Charlottesville in particular is but an exemplar of that. It sort of also is suggestive of the ways in which racism is opportunistic and how monuments become sites for espousing racist ideologies. And so in some ways, you know, I don't think that it necessarily has to happen in Charlotte for it not to be part of the American experience right now, right? Like, I mean, I think Charlottesville in particular is just a contemporary example of the ways in which monuments have, Confederate monuments in particular, have been sites of, unrest and for espousing ideas that of white supremacy. And so even if the intention isn't, to espouse those ideas, the fact that folks endow those monuments with that kind of meaning is really suggestive of how problematic these monuments are and how they become sites of a white supremacist ideology.
If they were to be moved, what would be the process? Any suggestions?
Well, I think part of the process should be that it needs to be a deliberation among community members writ large and not sort of top down in the ways in which those decisions are made. And so I think that's one of the first steps, is to make sure that there is democratization of the ways in which we delegate and talk about and deliberate about monuments writ large.
Thank you. I'd like to go back over to Maya. She has a comment that she wanted to make.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to answer that question.
Yes, please.
In regards especially to Silent Sam at UNC. For one, there's a question of whether Silent Sam is truly even legally on campus, as it was not ever approved by the NC Historical Commission. And these kinds of objects of remembrance and statues have to be approved by the NC Historical Commission to be placed on public ground, such as a public university. The other thing is, I would like to say to Mr. Powell, who's from the Sons of Confederate Veterans, United Daughters of the Confederacy groups in Missouri and Florida have taken the initiative after Charlottesville to reclaim these monuments in order to both distance themselves from white supremacist groups, such as the ones at Charlottesville, who rallied around these monuments, who also claim these monuments and perpetuate violence in their name. So I do think that that is another legal option. If groups such as the Sons of Confederate Veterans and the United Daughters of the Confederacy would speak out and claim their own identity, because right now there are white supremacist groups and groups who wish to violently suppress minorities who also claim these statues. And again, that those groups have already taken the initiative in places like Florida and Missouri. And that is seems to be a process that both the students of the Silent Sam sit-in have reached out to the United Daughters of the Confederacy to initiate. So speaking of the legality of removing these monuments, that I think is one option.
Have events like what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, hurt your cause, the Sons of the Confederate Veterans?
No, not at all. We have, for years, we've denounced white supremacy, racism, and the Klan. You can look on our national website and our latest motion that was passed at our general convention against the Klan is on there.
But when you have people walking through the streets with lit tiki torches screaming white power, doesn't that hurt you?
It probably hurts us more than it hurts the black community, because they're misrepresenting our ancestors. They're misrepresenting our flags, because those flags belong to us and they don't belong to them.
And the compromise here seems to be to take these statues down but put them in a museum where they are part of our history and they stay part of our history. Some of our most cherished objects are in museums around the world. Would that be objectionable to you?
Yes, sir. You cannot compromise your heritage. If you compromise your heritage, you have nothing. So, and I don't trust museums. We've had other instances. We've put things in museums, and they mysteriously disappear, never to be seen again. So, no, sir, that's not an option for us.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the fact that there are African-Americans who are members of Confederate veterans societies, daughters of Confederate veterans. Indeed, there are, because there were African Americans who served as Confederates. There's more information, however, to be known about what capacity they served, what role they served, and many of them were serving alongside a master. So there's always more to the story when we go into deeper layers. And I think it's interesting, we did try to get an African-American locally who is a member of the Daughters of the Confederacy, and she told us that she was not allowed to speak.
Okay, let me answer that. For some reason, Frank could answer it better, but for some reason, United Daughters of the Confederacy have chosen to remain silent on this issue. Why? I don't know.
Interesting.
Well, they're not here to represent themselves. Dr. Tyson,
let's get a microphone over to you.
The myth that there were African-American soldiers in the Confederacy rests upon this, which is that the slaveholders with huge plantations were exempt from going. But many slaveholders who went to the war took with them their body servant, an enslaved black man. The years afterward, the widows of the servants filed a petition to the government to get a Confederate pension, because the national government was paying those. So that's what the people are citing when they say there were African-American Confederate soldiers. So that's highly debatable at a minimum.
Well, so you think the monument in Monroe, North Carolina, to the 10 black Confederate soldiers is a lie?
Oh, indeed I do. Well, I would say a distortion, because it's a lie. But they don't think they're lying. They just believe things that the sons of Confederate, and not everything you put on paper is the truth. And the sons of Confederate veterans have their own history and their own printed materials, and many people think that's true. But if a historian of the period would tell you differently, that it's a little more complicated than that, and that you don't have. In fact, think of what about the you want to have stand up for African American soldiers. What about the Union African American soldiers? North Carolina produced a lot of African American soldiers for the Union. None that I know of for the Confederacy.
All you got to do is petition the North Carolina Historical Society and raise the money and put one up.
I think Ms. Newsom had a comment on that as well.
Yeah, I was just again to reiterate, the issue's not really monument. Like, the issue is not that we need to go around and put up a monument next to every Confederate monument to correct the record. The fundamental issue is, why are we maintaining monuments of the Confederacy in the public square, and what does it say about what we value in the public sector? That's the issue. It can't simply be resolved by establishing another monument. If the monument to the Confederacy is still there, we are still saying, what that still says is that the public sector, the government, is commemorating the cause of the Confederacy, which was slavery, is commemorating the cause for which these monuments were erected, which was Jim Crow and maintaining racial segregation.
And we have a comment back here as well.
I kind of have a counter narrative to that, because I look at it more so from the idea of First Amendment. Here's the thing. If we start taking down monuments without due process, then we basically are breaking the law as we know. Don't get me wrong, I have the same visceral reaction as anyone who's dealing with the Confederacy, i.e. the Confederate flag. I don't care for it. But with that said, what happens then when I want to wear my Black Lives Matter shirt and someone gets offended by that? Do I have to take it off? What happens then we have Colin Kaepernick, who is having the same reaction? I want him to be able to do the things he's doing by protesting the flag or protesting the issue why he's kneeling at the flag. I don't want us not to have the statues if we can do some with some, I guess, some level of law.
And Bree,
I want them to come down
head
with that law and due process.
Bree is shaking her head. I want to understand.
Yeah, so just real quickly again, there's a difference between a person flying, putting a Confederate flag bumper sticker on the back of their car and the state of South Carolina flying a Confederate flag on its public property. Like, we're talking about two different things. That's not the same as attacking everyone's freedom of speech. We're talking about government property. And again, that goes to the core of what we say we value as a political, as a governmental system. It's not about taking everybody's rights away. And yes, I think most people, we would love to be able to legally remove monuments. People were, for years before I scaled the flagpole, people were trying to exercise every legal means available to remove the monuments. Part of what we are encountering is, again, systemic white supremacy and laws being passed to maintain and protect these monuments. When North Carolina passed that law in 2015, they removed from the city of Durham the power of that municipality to remove the monument on their own. So this is, we would love to go through a process of let's legally remove the monuments. Let's have a process of education where we all understand the correct history. But part of what we are encountering is people adding more layers to maintain what is a monument to racism.
Thank you.
The State Historical Commission is the commission responsible for all of these monuments and markers throughout the state. And Dr. Henry Watson is with us. He was on the commission for a while. And I'd like to know, Harry Watson, excuse me, I'd like to know why, while you were sitting on the commission, what the commission work entailed and what do you expect to come out of the meeting in April. They postponed this meeting until April to talk about what's going to happen to these monuments going forward.
Well, to answer your second question first, I think it's ought to be an occupational law for historians not to predict the future. predicting the past is hard enough. The Historical Commission's work before we got famous was not as exciting as the things they're dealing with right now. I'm no longer on the commission. There are historic preservation plans, historic neighborhoods, and so on that we are asked to look at and have input on. So it's a variety of responsibilities, but not very many hot-button issues except this one.
So you're not going to make any predictions going forward. Okay. Darn.
Well, thank you for your comments. I want to share a comment because there has been quite a bit of discussion in social media. We have a question for one of our audience members, Russell Jones, I believe. Is it Russell Robinson, I'm sorry, from North Carolina Central University. And the question is, why celebrate symbols that are counter-American? Some people would say that they're counter-American.
Well, that's a question I actually had to bring up. The way I look at it more so is when you think about the study of signs and symbols, you're thinking about how these signs and symbols represent the psyche and what you celebrate. Very good example, I grew up as a kid watching the show The Dukes of Hazzard and the General Lee. At the age of 8, I didn't know what the General Lee was, who he was. I saw a red car jumping over Roscoe P. Coltrane. But then, as I got older, for me personally, when I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee, the time I then saw the Confederate flag was when a student driving a pickup truck called me the N-word and spat on me. And when we talk about celebrating these signs and symbols of the Confederacy, that comes to my mind. So the question that I would raise to those of you who are in support of this is, why are we celebrating things, these signs and symbols, that in today's contemporary context are so anti-American?
I think a lot of the gap thank you so much, has to do with actually being able to put yourself in the shoes of the person on the other side of the argument. We sort of give lip service right. to the idea of, well, I heard what you're saying, I understand what you're sure. saying, but to actually view the history from the lens of the person who is trying to explain their discomfort, and try rather than standing there and say, well, why don't you see the history the way that I do? I've had a wonderful opportunity to visit all around our state, and we have rich history about our state. If I look at it through the lens that is widespread, sort of the mainstream lens of our heritage, our Southern heritage, I am forced to accept and appreciate a view of our heritage that I am not the narrator of. But then if mainstream American can step across the line and understand and see that history from my perspective or from the viewpoint of someone whose ancestors were not only enslaved, but for now hundreds of years, there's been continued oppression, I think that there would begin to be a greater understanding.
Let me take the temperature of the room, because not everybody got to talk. Who thinks there is any room for compromise? Wow, a lot of people think there's room for compromise. That actually is surprising.
Well, that's promising.
Yes.
It's surprising and it's promising, and it's a great place to wrap up. But this has been a great conversation.
Yes.
Mike, thank you so much for coming out and helping to keep the conversation going and bringing it to the WFAE listeners.
Well, it was a great pleasure for all of us at FAE to be involved in this. Something new for me, but an important topic, I think, to collaborate on with UNC-TV.
Thank you, Mike. And if you would like to revisit this conversation, we will have it available online at unctv.org. Thanks so much for joining us. For Focus On, I'm Deborah Holt-Noel.
And I'm Mike Collins.